The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmage, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 134.
Incorporated.
The Overlords.
The Overlords.
All right, okay, you win. Overlords.
The Overlords Incorporate.
That's right. You may be wondering what that's all about. Well, on this day, September 7th, 1998, Google, or the guys that founded Google, got a check made out to Google Inc., but they had not incorporated yet. So they went down and incorporated, so I guess they could more easily process that check.
Cash that check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so yeah, so that's what happened back in 1998.
Yeah.
That fledgling startup.
Right. I know quite a few small businesses that did the same thing. They waited to incorporate until they actually got money coming in.
Yeah, because I think there's a little, isn't there a little charge for that? Might be.
It's not much. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's very
federal,
nominal.
It's free for federal, but it's $20 for the state.
$25, yeah, bucks, that's Michigan. Right. Yeah, I have to renew every year for my little company, and I pay him $25. So, anyway.
Your portfolio handling.
That's why that's why I went the DBA route. You don't get protection from being sued, but it doesn't cost you anything.
You just declare bankruptcy. All right. So, I guess it's time to catch up. So, Tony, you're right across the table from me. Oh, first of all, we got to mention what's going on. We are podcasting on location in Detroit this week because Tony.
Yeah, I have no power at home.
That's right.
And we had,
I think your wife probably says that. No, I'm just kidding. That's a joke. It's a joke.
It was a good one.
Friday night, which was today's Sunday morning. So Friday night, we had a storm come through and it knocked out power. And we were at a restaurant because it was my wife's birthday. And we were sitting there in the restaurant and I'm sitting facing east. I'm facing west. So I could see the clouds coming in. And that's generally the weather pattern for around here is it comes in from the west.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there watching it come in, and it's also getting about 8 o'clock at night. I'm like, well, I don't know whether those really bad clouds coming in or whether it's just getting dark outside. So we sat there for a little bit, and then all of a sudden, the bushes are all like waving back and forth, and rain is going sideways, and the lights are flickering in the restaurant. But then it comes back on, and nothing. We're like, okay. So we stop by the movie rental place on the way home, get a movie, and we leave from there, and then we get a block away from the movie place, and power's out. We're like, uh-oh. And
our movie tonight.
Right, our house is notorious. Our neighborhood's notorious for having no power when big storms come through. So we're on the way home, and then power comes back, you know, as we're driving through the neighborhoods. And then we get by ours, and then the power's out. So we get home, and we had 6 movies we rented we're going to watch over the next few days. And
you still don't have power.
And we still have no power. We couldn't watch them.
Wow. So did you take them back?
Well, actually, we were able to watch one of them because we have one of those DVD players in the van that comes out and has a battery with it. So we took it into our bedroom and watched it in there.
So you all piled into the van and watched it.
Well, we were thinking about it. So we still have no power. And so we came to Mary's.
Yeah, so here we are. I know, just like old times.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Other things going on with me is starting school again, going back for my master's in information assurance, and that's at Eastern Michigan University. So
yeah, I saw your picture you took first day of school. You'd think he'd be in the classroom. He's out wandering around outside.
He never answered my question.
Oh,
did mommy give me a backpack?
Yeah.
No, I'm still using my same 10 or 12 year old backpack. Anyway, yesterday I was actually the first class. Like, I had to go that day. I was going around campus finding where I had to go and stuff.
Yeah.
But yesterday, I get there, I had my laptop out and stuff, and she's like, yeah, we're going to be in a museum for the rest of the semester, so I'd suggest not bring your laptops anymore.
You're going to be in a museum?
Yeah, the Henry Ford Museum and the Greenfield Village.
Oh, that's where your class is going to be?
Yeah, it's going
to
be.
Oh, that's convenient. I mean, more convenient than going all the way to.
Yeah, it's closer for me. It's only about 10-minute difference for me. I like the Henry Ford Museum and Greenfield Village. So it'll be neat taking that same thing I've been at before and putting it in the context of studying and classes. And it's about the history of technology, the class.
Have you joined a fraternity yet?
No, I haven't. But yeah, that was the big thing going on with me.
Well, you know, we're expecting to hear back from you then. Well, because of the nature of what you're taking, there's an opportunity for discussion of open source software types of things that might be involved, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to be very interested to hear how that gets worked into the curriculum.
This specific class, I don't think so. I think my other class I can't.
Oh, okay. Well, when
it's about objects. So it's like how technology around a specific object changed and how it changed culture.
Oh, okay.
So kind of like the,
something.
Stuff.
Yeah, no,
stuff.
Yeah. The stuff.
The train, like the train that went from the East
Coast
to the West
Coast. How we went from magnetic tape to hard drives to flash drives and how it keeps getting smaller, but the capacity keeps getting bigger.
Yeah. That would be
okay.
That would be one.
Well, I think that, I'll be interested to hear on your courses and especially how open source software fits into it when, you know, when it's appropriate.
In other words, Mary's going to go back to school vicariously through you, Tony.
Yeah. I'll be taking notes. Although,
you know what I was thinking about during the class is that one of the readings had, it was talking about how Thomas Jefferson was, and his philosophies around things. And one of them was the Protestant work ethic and how that reminded me of open source. Because the quote-unquote Protestant work ethic is that everybody works together and for the betterment of the society.
It didn't work out so well for the pilgrims.
Right.
It really didn't. Did you know that?
Yeah, I know. Most of them died.
And, yeah. They were almost totally wiped out their first year.
Yeah. So it was just interesting. I was in the middle of class. I was already making parallels to that.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, good. So, Matt?
When I got home from work on Saturday morning, the power was out.
Was out?
Out.
Because you were at work when it... Of course, you didn't notice it at the data center because...
No. Well, it went out. I got up on Friday to go to work. And as I was making my breakfast at 7 o'clock at night, the power went out while I was making breakfast. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'll just get dressed and go to work. So I went to work. So then when I came home Saturday morning, it was still out. And I just could not sleep because it was too hot. And I'm fat. And heat, me and heat don't get along. So I drove to our other data center in Dearborn where I know there's a big comfy couch and nobody else because there's one other tech there only. So, yeah, I slept at our other data center in Dearborn.
All right.
Good. Well, you look well rested.
Well, no, I was up then last night all night.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah. Huh. Well, let's see. Well, for me, you know, I got a little notice in the email, my email, from Dropbox, you know, they just recently increased. I went from, I think, 100 or 150 gigs. Because, you know, I do the $9.99 a month thing. They increased it to 1 terabyte. I mean, it just leaped for the same price. And I was kind of amazed. And then I thought to myself, well, it's really going to do me no good because I don't have a 1 terabyte drive. Now, I realize I can kind of put some things together. And maybe create a 1 terabyte space, but unless I buy more
unless
hard
you just
drive
keep
space.
It in the cloud and don't keep it locally at all.
Well, I have to have
you could do full backups in the cloud and not have a full backup on.
Well, I'd have to look and see if the way Dropbox is set up is you've got the folder, so and then it automatically syncs. So
well, you can set that so that you can make a subfolder. Is the one that syncs, and then your main folder won't sync.
I have to look into that, just see how to take advantage of it. I mean, I'm not adverse to buying a bigger hard drive, but anyway, so that that was something that occurred, and I was kind of happy to see that. And then, of course, I was up north during that big storm, up north, meaning the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and that was a good time. Matt, I had I think I mentioned to you before we started recording, I had a porcupine pale ale, which I thought was pretty good. And the fish up there. Oh man.
You can't get fresher white fish.
Oh my God. It was delicious. Yeah. Fish tacos, fish and chips. Yeah. It ran the gamut. And then we toured the Sioux Locks, which is a lock system for transitioning ships from Lake Superior to Lake Huron. And
what are they keeping locked up?
The family jewels. I don't know. But anyway, so it was really cool, and I got some video of it, so I maybe just put it up on YouTube or something. That's pretty much what happened. What happened to me? I luckily didn't lose power, but my neighbor across the way here did, and the meter got ripped right off his house.
Holy cow!
Yeah, because a branch hit the wire, and the wire just—I guess it's attached pretty well because the wire didn't come loose. The meter did.
Wow. Yeah.
Maybe it's one of those tearaway things.
No, it's the wire's really lugged down inside those boxes. Yeah. The box is usually just screwed to the house.
Yeah, so it just came right off. So anyway, but that's pretty much it.
But it had to. Where did it break the connection? Did it break the connection from the box to the house? Or
well, haven't gone out to the back. They're not going out to the backyard because it's kind of hanging off. Damaged the gutter. I don't know if it's on any fence in there. Well, they've been out the door, but they're not going into the backyard because some guy got electrocuted a couple nights ago.
Oh, don't be stupid. Don't go pick it up.
Well, he didn't even. It was dark out. He didn't see it.
Oh.
And he encountered it.
That's yeah, if you come within like 10 feet of one of those wires, they'll
get shocked. Yeah, the grass is wet too.
Yeah, so. And he didn't see it. So, anyway.
Oh, man.
But that's pretty much that. All right. I guess we're moving on to
Matt. What's happening with the Colonel?
The Colonel news.
Okay.
So we
take
have,
it away, Matt.
We have the main line, which is 3.17-RC3, released on 9.1. And then the newest stable release is going to be 3.16.2, released on 9.5. Then we have long-term kernel 3.14.18, released on 9.5. Long-term kernel 3.12.28, released on 9.7. Long-term kernel 3.10.54, released on 9.5. And long-term kernel 3.4.103, released on 8.14.
8.14.
I know, I got so used to say that.
I think we would have figured that out.
And then long-term kernel 3.2.62, released on 8.6. I think we covered those last time, but can't be too sure.
Yeah, well, they don't have many changes
once
you get to that level.
Right, that's all for the kernel news.
All right, well, thanks, Matt.
Yeah, thank you.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
All right, distributions for this week, or bi-week, fortnight. All right, so we recorded on the 21st last time. So
21st or 25th? Was it the 21st?
Or the 23rd. I don't know.
Yeah. 23rd.
Anyways, so on the 25th, we have 4M Linux 9.1. It's a minimalist and lightweight distro featuring JWM Window Manager.
I didn't even look that up.
Oh, it's the all-in-one edition, and it's been changed to stable. Yeah, so apparently it was beta, and then stable. That's how it normally goes, isn't it? But they have like a rescue version and a media version and a server and a gaming editions. So this is the all-in-one that's been released.
Good for them. Yeah, I looked at that as I've got. Well, in the living room, I've got this old Dell box that I'm thinking of repurposing to something. Right now, remember I talked about the Vortex server I put on there, and it worked pretty well.
Oh, yeah?
But now that I got rid of my one internet connection, and I'm just using one now, I'd have to run a wire because there's no wireless card in there at all.
So, oh, okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. You know, they also said that they replaced Apache with THTTPD.
Well, that's a lighter weight.
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right. So next up we have is Kali Linux 1.0.9. And this is a bug fix update. They are Debian-based with primary use for penetration testing and forensics analysis. And Matt, what was Kali used to be called?
Backtrack.
That's right. That's
right, yep.
As a matter of fact, I posted a picture to my G+, which did not receive the response I was hoping for. It was pictures of the typical Linux users, like the Gentoo users, is a big fat guy sitting there in his underwear with torn apart computers around him. And the Mint user is a very small child. Hey. And the Fedora user, though, was in a data center. So,
sure.
So I'm like, this is pretty right on to me.
You know, they if you go out to their website, they've got the complete list of tools that they've got, and it's a massive list. It's pretty impressive.
Yes, it is.
You can't imagine any tool they don't have just looking at this.
And they had Backtrack on that list, though, and it was Backtrack. It wasn't
Kali.
Kali. So.
Yeah.
And it was a picture of Keanu Reeves in The Matrix. And then they separated Ubuntu and Unity. And Ubuntu was, I forget what Ubuntu was, but under Unity, it was just a picture of Mark Shuttleworth.
He's the only happy user.
That's funny.
All right. And then next up, we have Absolute Linux 14.10. Which is a lightweight distro based on Slackware.
Yeah, I think they were able to get this onto a CD rather than a lot of distros go out to a DVD size.
Yeah.
Just because of the things that they've got on there. I mean, just looking at Kali, it's 2.8 gig, and this one here, they're still you can still get it. On a CD if you want, although they do have a larger version too. So,
all right,
there you have it.
All right, and also on the 28th we have Debian 2014.1, which they're Ubuntu based and they're highly customized and intuitive desktop environment, and that's based on KDE, isn't it?
It's based on Ubuntu, I think.
No, but their desktop environment. For some reason, I was thinking it was a KDE desktop.
No, I don't.
Customized.
No, it actually has elements. I mean, visually, it has elements of Apple. It's got the dock at the bottom. I don't think it's. I don't think so.
Cool.
Specifically on KDE, maybe it is. I mean, I've played around with it. I've installed it, but. There you have it. It's a very polished distro.
All right. So on the first day of this month, 9/1, it was released Robo Linux 7.6.2, and they're pre-configured for VirtualBox, running Windows seamlessly alongside Robo. And you did a review of that one, didn't you, Mary?
Yeah, last year, but. They also have got this automated method for updating. And they said that, and they listed at midnight, and this is, you know, again, they just said that users can upgrade at exactly midnight on September 2nd using the built-in auto-upgrade Robo Linux version, but they didn't say on or after. So it sort of sounds like if you don't do it then, that's it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so they've got that as part of their repertoire of features.
Is it midnight where? You know, if it's midnight, you know, GMT.
When in doubt, Zulu time.
Yeah. No. Always Zulu time.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would be my guess, but it's a good point. Yeah. He doesn't really come out and say where.
All right.
That distro is really, they've got some virtual machines now that even if you're not running Robo, you can install the virtual machine in your own distro, SUSE, whatever.
Nice.
For, you know, Windows XP support, because, you know, that's their big thing. You can still run it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, as long as you just use the same snapshot and never save anything, and you'll be safe.
Yeah.
All right. So next up, we have Mubuntu 3-1.00. And Mbuntu's is Ubuntu based, and it's designed for refurbished computers that are humanitarian. Whoa, that was way off.
Those humanitarian Hungarians.
That's yeah. Right. And humanitarians who aren't.
Except there's no more Hungary. Did you know that, Tony?
No, I guess I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, it's broken up into a couple of different countries now.
Really? Which one? What countries?
Bosnia and Herzegovina. Bosnia and Herzegovina used to be part of Hungary.
Huh. Hmm.
And I forget what the other one is.
Well, now what are they going to call Hungarian goulash? But they...
Because Hungary was always one of those made-up countries after World War II.
Hmm. You know, one thing that the Mbuntu team says that they said, even though this release is delivered as the final version, they're recommending for the moment that people continue to install Mbuntu's 2 for some reason. And they said the next update at the end of October will have some improvements from Mbuntu's 3. So you might want to check that out before you go ahead and install. Although, again, the nice thing about this, as you noted, is the fact that they are... they donate to the less fortunate, humanitarian, I guess is what you'd call it.
All right, nice.
All right.
All right, go on. We have Tails 1.1.1. And I'm sure everybody knows, if you've been listening to us for a little while, you know that Tails is one of those, it's the amnesic incognito live system, meaning it's a live CD that you can boot, and it uses Tor, and it's for anonymous web browsing and computer usage. You can also install it to a PC. It's based on Debian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, if you check DistroRotch's front page, they do list the security updates. But also, in addition, Tony, I think as you alluded to, they've got some bug fixes. One thing they did do is they upgraded to Tor button 1.6.12.1, and then they installed some documentation. And then they're expecting to release the next, and these guys are very specific about when they're going to release the next version. So you can look for the next version on October 14th for their information on their website.
All right. All right. Next up, we have Gentoo Linux 2014.08. No, why am I saying this wrong? 2014.0826. Normally, there would be dots in there, but I guess Gentoo likes long numbers instead.
Yeah. And you know what they're calling this one? Because I don't think it's... Is it listed there? I don't think it's listed there.
No, I don't see
they're
it.
They're calling it Iron Penguin.
Iron Penguin.
Yeah. And the last time Gentoo was listed on DistroWatch's page, the front page, was 2 years ago.
Wow.
So it's been a long time.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of just goes back and just does its thing, builds from its sources, and then it shows up again. So, yeah. So they're... yeah, so the Iron Penguin version, that's pretty cool. I like an Iron Penguin. Sounds strong.
Right. All right. Next up, on the 5th, we have Calculate Linux 14, which is their new updated version. They're also Gentoo-based, and they have both KDE and XFCE and the Media Center edition and server also.
You know, that distro always gets me. Because I think it should be CentOS-based.
Right.
I mean, Red Hat-based.
Yeah.
You know, because of Scientific Linux.
Yeah, Scientific and Calculate. Yeah.
Well, you know, as we said before, it has nothing to do with calculations. But their directory server, according to some information I pulled from their website, their directory server can successfully replace a Windows NT domain controller, and Windows clients are supported.
You know, you can do that with Samba 3.
Well, I'm just telling you what they said here. And they provide you know, the additional, I guess, supporting service that can be deployed in a matter of minutes, like LDAP, mail, that type of thing.
Right.
So, and they, right now, the localization is only English and Russian, but they're expecting to add French sometime in the not-too-distant future. So, there you have it, on Calculate Linux.
Now, they're natively Russian, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So, they translate the Russian to English.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the French translation, is that going to go from the Russian to French, or is that going to go from Russian to English to French?
I would, I don't know for sure, but I would...
Or are they going to go through Vietnamese somehow?
I'll email them and ask.
All right.
No, I would presume that it would go from Russian to French. I don't know, Matt. Those are pretty heavy questions to be asking this early in the morning. Although for you, it's practically happy hour.
Yeah.
Speaking of that.
All right.
So,
all right. Yeah, and last on our list is Sparky Linux 3.5. And they have the LXDE, Razer QT, E18, E19 Dev editions.
Yeah, but if you're going to use the E19 Dev, you've got to uninstall the E18, some of the libraries and things there. So
oh, wow.
I would recommend not doing
not
that.
Not backwards compatible.
Yeah, so it's sort of like either or, but not both. You know what they've added to the repository? They've added Spider Oak, and I don't know if that is listed on DistroWatch, but they also replaced TrueCrypt with ZuluCrypt. Mm. You guys heard of ZuluCrypt?
No.
No.
Is that a fork of TrueCrypt?
I think it's an independent project, but the whole TrueCrypt situation, it just forced them to take a look at that and decide that ZuluCrypt was going to be a better file encryption system than TrueCrypt, you know, for obvious reasons. So they went ahead and did that.
You know, they just threw in the towel. That was never explained, was it?
TrueCrypt?
Those TrueCrypt guys, yeah.
Well, I don't
think
they
got through the first code review, and then they started the second one, and then all of a sudden just threw the towel and said, we're done. We're closing up shop. It was never explained, was it?
No, yeah. I
don't remember hearing anything. Right. What was that site, too? It was...
Audit TrueCrypt.
Is it audited? Is it audited.com or something like that? Is TrueCrypt... I don't know, but it's a good question. Good question. Matt, you're just full of good questions this morning.
Give me another Heineken and I'll be even more full.
I will do that. No. I will do that. Yeah, it's TrueCryptAuditedYet.com. Update. The last update was April 14th. Phase one was complete, and then they had they had a link to the report. And then,
Surely after that was when the TrueCrypt guys threw in the towel.
Now, the audit guys.
June or July or something.
That the project is going, that the project
I,
is.
I thought it was just maybe less than a month after they threw, after that report came out. Yeah.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it just goes to show here today, gone tomorrow.
Right.
Well, I'm thinking they found something really big and didn't want to say what it was and just folded up shop.
Well, they're saying here, you know, out at the site it says, warning, using TrueCrypt is not as secure as it may contain unfixed security issues. And this is out from SourceForge, which is where you can download it. So, and then they have got some instructions here for migrating from TrueCrypt to BitLocker, if that's what you want to do. And, so they go into considerable detail outlining the set of instructions, complete with screenshots for people like me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they got here big red letters warning using TrueCrypt is not secure. Well, that's only because it's not being updated. There you have it.
All right. And before we go on to the top five, there's quite a few development releases this week, but one that people may be interested in is the Ubuntu 14.10 Beta 1 release.
Oh, really?
Development, yeah. So,
when did that come out?
On the 28th, 8/28.
Oh, yes.
So
the first beta. Oh, yeah. When it gets to beta, usually it's kind of usable.
Yeah, but there's still a lot of
bugs. Not for production. But,
right. They already have images for Kubuntu, Lubuntu, Ubuntu GNOME, Ubuntu Kylin, Zubuntu, and the cloud images. So.
All right.
Is Ubuntu still moving forward with Wayland?
Kinda, I don't know.
That whole discussion kind of just, because like that, I forget what it is now. What was the X server that the rest of the world was working on to replace X?
Not Mir? No.
Mir, that's it.
Nope.
No. The rest of the world was working on Wayland, and Ubuntu was going with Mir.
Mir, yeah.
That's what it was. And whatever happened to that Wayland Mir stuff? I mean, you just stopped hearing about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it'll bubble up again. It's kind of like the whole init system D thing. That bubbled for a while and then it sort of calmed down. And then I don't know if you've seen lately.
Well, that's
not to get
off
topic.
My one story isn't involving it, but not involving that particularly. It's just a Techmin story about explaining it.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at their, it's ubuntu.com/mirror.
Yeah.
And they have, you can get a PPA to try to run it. And they have 1404 PPA.
Right, so but when's the last time that was updated ever?
I don't know. Let me look through the thing. Oh, here's files.
And what's happening with Wayland and X? I mean, did they just give up on that and decide, X is old but good enough? I mean...
I don't know. Maybe we should see if a listener wants to come on and tell us about it.
Yeah.
Is that twist off matter? Okay. So, Matt's getting a fresh beer, and I'm getting some fresh coffee. Thank you, Mary. And while we're doing that, I guess we will go on to the top five of the week.
Top five? Top five?
Top five. And as we hit refresh, are you already refreshed?
I'm already refreshed.
All right. So, number... sure. Mary is even bringing me a new cinnamon roll. And
cinnamon.
Wow.
My first job ever. Ooh, I think I put too much in there.
It's all right. Thank you. Maybe I'll dunk half of my cinnamon roll in and make it a cinnamon roll coffee. anyway, so top five of the week. Here, let me hit the sound intro.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
And at number five, we have Arch with 1235.
And trending up.
And number four, we have Simplicity with 1257.
And trending up.
Number three, we have Debian with 1523.
And trending down.
Number two, we have Ubuntu with 2007.
And trending down.
And in the number one spot, we have Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 2152.
And trending down.
And all in the world is right.
Yes.
Mint back on number one. And Ubuntu back at number two.
Yep.
And PCBSD is coming in at a strong 38 and trending up.
Ooh. All right.
I had to say it.
All right. So, I guess going on, next we have some news, don't we?
But, you know, FreeBSD, which is the parent of PCBSD, is at 34.
It is, and holding its own.
So.
Yeah, and speaking of that, they just released the first beta of that Lumina desktop, the PCBSD team, you know, because Chris Moore's brother Ken is... kind of the project leader for that, or maybe is the main developer. And they're going to be, I think, porting it over to FreeBSD, too.
Isn't that the environment that looks Unity-like?
No. I have it on this laptop as one of my options, and it's... I do not recall. When you say Unity-like, you're talking about a left
The
toolbar?
The bar here that disappears and comes back. And
no, I don't think so unless they've changed it.
Any launcher bar you can set either at the bottom or the side or the top.
Yeah, Matt.
So I guess any
well, then what's Unity's big freaking deal?
I don't know. I'm not all.
What do you mean they're big freaking deal? Well, you know what it is.
Then why is everybody all pissed off about Unity? I mean,
I think it's because
I think when it first came out, it really sucked.
Yeah, well, that was one of the reasons. The other thing is that people are used to the bottom status bar.
Well, not if you were a GNOME user.
No, you're right. No, you have the top status bar, and the status bar is still there. It's just the launcher is.
There's no status bar in Unity, right?
No separate status bar. There's a bar along the top.
There's a little panel.
Icons.
Panel along the top. Then, and then you got the left left app launcher
and
area.
If you want to see what apps are running.
I think people got ticked off because they went from GNOME.
This is on, this is on, this is on.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't actually, it doesn't give you a full thing.
I think people were upset that, and again, this is probably rehashing old stuff, but I think it seems to me that people were upset because they kind of they got rid of GNOME and just went their own way.
So what is this Illumos?
This, not Illumos, it's, what did I call it? Lumina.
Oh, okay. Lumina, this Lumina desktop that the PCBS.
They're using Qt5 as the toolkit.
What's it look like? What's it feel like? Have you used it, Mary?
Not recently. I think it was still in its alpha stage when I tried it, and then I went back to KDE. But it's a simpler desktop, which I think people who like the more minimalist approach would appreciate.
Like, more like LXDE as opposed to KDE. Mm-hmm. Because those two are similar, KDE and LXDE, in my opinion. Their functionality is similar, but LXDE is much more simpler than the KDE desktop.
Yeah. Actually, just let me do something here for a second. dead time.
Yeah.
No. There was a blog on PCBSD.org where they've got the new Lumina source repo, and then they've, as I said, they got the port to it. it is, let's see here. You're going to be able to run it. One of the things that they really are shooting for is to be able to have a nice full desktop with lighter computers. In other words, computers that don't have the processing power like this, although this is a little out of date now because it's only got 4 gigs of RAM in it, but if you've got a computer with maybe only 2 gigs of RAM, you're going to be able to use this Lumina desktop far more effectively than you would ever be able to use a KDE desktop just because of the firepower needed.
Because KDE's a hog, but we love
it. Yeah, and apparently, based on some of the feedback that has come in, you're going to be able to, I guess, more easily define what you want on your favorites list and that type of thing. And I think they're going to be not shortcuts, but they're going to be symlinks to the actual program, so you'll be able to create those. I have not tried it, but I'll see if an upgrade's available or I'll add that.
Do you know if there's a port of it to Linux? Like, can it be installed on Linux?
I will not be the least bit surprised if there is one once it gets past the beta stage. I will not be the least bit surprised. So, especially because it's built on Qt5. So,
all right.
How did we get there?
I have no idea.
All right. So.
All right. So going into news.
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 What the heck is news?
It's time for the tech news of the week.
All right, so news.
All right.
Go ahead, Matt.
News. I have one story. It's not really news, but it's a TechMint story.
Yeah.
And so if you just go to TechMint and search for systemd replaces init in Linux, you'll find it.
I've not heard about that.
And what it is I think it covers the differences between init and systemd and the shortcomings of systemd and the shortcomings of init and why the change to systemd was necessary. I think it covers all of the above fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this nice little graphic for systemd versus init, and there's a whole ton of no's underneath in it, and a ton of yeses under.
Well, we talked about that too.
I'm thinking author of this story may have been a little more biased towards systemd, and that if you'd have gotten an init person, that would be skewed the other way. But I think it covers the controversy, shall we say, pretty accurately.
And of course, anybody in the server world who issues systemd can certainly. And if their distro is moving in that direction, they can certainly run FreeBSD, which...
And I follow a bunch of BSD people on Twitter.
Do you?
Oh, yeah, and they're all, like, screaming, "You Linux refugees that still want your init, come over to BSD. We will
take care of you." Yeah, I think I saw something similar to that, they're saying, "Yeah, you can come on over here."
That's funny.
Yeah, it is. So,
and they've got the better license.
Well, it's, what, 3 paragraphs? I think they took one out. It was 4. They took one out. Now they got 3.
It's just the better license.
But I think a few episodes ago, there was an article in Linux Format, and I talked about that a little bit as far as the difference between init and systemd. And I think one of them was the fact that if there's a that systemd, I think, recovers things a little bit better. If there's a problem,
It has some problems. The one big problem that I don't like about it is it's so monolithic.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one big fat system.
Yeah, it's it.
One big fat system D.
and it's kind of scary. It, mm-hmm. I mean, it's coming though, whether we like it or not. it's coming to a system near us. As a matter of fact, my Fedora is already running System D.
And how's it going for you?
I don't really notice it on my personal systems too much, but servers, I don't know. Because and think about with servers too, as I'm so used to the commands, like it's service HTTP status, and this is no more under System D. So.
I think you're able to query.
It does boot a lot faster, but how often are you booting your system?
If it's a Linux server, not very often.
Exactly.
If it's Windows, well, that's the first troubleshooting step. Reboot the server.
We don't do Windows at work.
Yeah, I know.
We'll install it for you on a server if you want it, but that's it. We don't support it at all.
Yeah. All right. Well, so that was your story.
That's it, yes.
Okay.
TechMint. System D replaces init in Linux.
Yeah, you know, the thing, I've got a couple of them. One is, TCP/IP has been around for years.
TCP what?
TCP/IP. TCP/IP, the protocol. Are you not familiar with it, Matt?
I'm familiar with TCP.
Mm-hmm. I've heard it referred to as TCP/IP.
Oh,
I should have said the slash. I'm sorry. TCP/IP.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, now you know that.
You know what IP in that circumstance?
Protocol.
Yeah, when I hear IP, I'm thinking
IP address.
Address.
Oh, okay, yeah. I understand. Anyway, there's a consortium of organizations and companies, mostly organizations, universities, that type of thing, that have come together to collaborate and come up with a new standard, because this one is kind of long in the beard, or long in the tooth?
Long in the tooth.
Okay. Gray beard. There we go. Something like that. But anyway, so this article that I read was from the Register, and it was nice to see, and it's been funded, I think since 2010, it's been funded by the National, or at least the National Science Foundation. This is our tax dollars at work, by the way, which is nice to see, and I fully support. Coming up with a new protocol for that other one, I just think it's a good thing. But
we don't need a new protocol.
Do you know what company?
We don't need no stinking new protocols.
All right. Now, companies like Cisco, VeriSign, Panasonic are a part of this consortium. And then there's quite a few universities. University of Michigan is in there, as a matter of fact. But do you know what company is in there that I just I was a little annoyed at?
Oracle.
No.
Microsoft.
You know, I looked for them, and they are not. No, from what I could see, I went out to the site for this group, and I looked specifically to see if Microsoft was a part of it, and I did not see them listed. And you know, it's going to be called Name Data Networking. NDN is going to be the replacement for TCP/IP.
Over, it's TCP over IP.
Yeah, so TCP/IP is going to be replaced with Named Data Networking. Now, the company, and I know you're waiting on the edge of your seat, Comcast.
Oh, that's going to be horrible.
I
agree. We don't need it. There's already, there's IPv6 coming out, and
what the hell, man?
You know,
I know. And I saw that.
You know how long IPv6 has been from when they first started until now?
Oh, it's been 15 years.
Yeah.
Oh, 15 years.
Yeah, a long time.
And this is what they're trying. It's going to be like 20, 30 years before
I'll be dead before this is even in discussion.
Okay. Well, you know, when I saw this article, I posted it out to my Google Plus stream, and I said, you know, something to the effect, this looks interesting, but please don't let Comcast touch anything.
Yeah, really.
So.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so that was one of the stories, or one of the articles that I had that I thought was interesting, at least as far as who the participants are. And then I have, and this actually goes back to our little discussion about Unity and Ubuntu, because, and I saw this on Softpedia, and then I think Matthew Williams posted this too, just shortly after I saw it, because I was going to post it. But NBC and the Today Show.
Oh yeah,
they were talking about.
I just read
the celebrity hacking story.
I don't remember where. LXER. I read it on LXER.
Yeah, so Ubuntu was used by NBC and the Today Show to illustrate this the celebrity hacking story.
Really?
Yeah.
It wasn't in the story at all, but somebody saw it on the computer.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah.
The screenshots they were using to illustrate the story was running Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. And then, let's see, the only other story, this is a little bit dated, though, because it happened, I think, not this past week, but the week before, was that the chief technology officer at Red Hat suddenly stepped down.
Yes. Mm. Totally out of the blue.
I mean, it was, you know, whenever you read, you know, in the departure release.
I was waiting
release,
for the sex scandal, and never happened.
I know when they say, we wish him well in his new endeavors. Whenever you read that, that is like,
yeah,
that's
a
kiss of death.
He was ousted.
Something.
Totally
he was
ousted.
Gone within minutes.
Because if they leave for somewhere else, it's always like, we wish him well at, not we wish him well in his new future endeavors.
His future endeavors, yeah. Well, I think there was some tension between him and, what's his face?
Oh, Matt. His name Matt something, I think.
It might be. Yeah, this other Red Hat executive.
Yeah.
So I think
the big kahuna guy. Yeah.
The big kahuna. So when you have a dispute with at that level, the little kahuna's going to go.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was the only other story. I already talked about the Lumina desktop, and there'll be a link to that blog posting at pcbsd.org. And speaking of that, Ken Moore, who is the architect of this, is going to be at Ohio Linux Fest.
Really?
Talking about Lumina. Yes.
All right.
I read that and I thought, all the more reason to go.
I just saw, I can't remember who it was, some big Linux guy is going to be there too.
Yeah. We could probably talk more about that when we go into the Linux convention scene a little bit later.
Hey.
So, but those are the news items that I had.
And I found one link, and it was... From linuxuser.co.uk. It says, if you're interested in a career path for Linux, then, here's some interesting, graphic. And so it's a picture. And it says, these are your skills, and this is probably where you fit in. Did you see that?
No, you've got to forward this one to me.
It's a big picture with the evolution of the sysadmin.
Oh, and I did see that. It's a penguin that starts crawling on its belly and then slowly becomes upright.
Yeah. And if you're senior admin, then you're standing up tall. And,
yeah.
And I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
And it's actually, I'm saying, the Linux Foundation, linux.com.
Yes, I did saw that. I saw that on their Twitter feed.
Yeah, that's neat. And that's what I had for a news link.
Which, by the way, do either of you use Twitter?
I have a Twitter account, and I tweet once a year.
Twitter is going to go away from a chronological stream.
No.
Yes.
They're going to do the...
They're going to go Facebook-y.
Oh.
Oh. I got to find something else now. Holy crap.
They should have a... I think they should put a...
What do you mean they're
going to
go Facebook-y?
Facebook stream's not chronological.
No, it goes through and finds people who you think you may like, and then posts their
post
stuff first.
Gets priority over. Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, I don't use Facebook. I have a Facebook account, but
G Plus does the same thing.
Yeah, you know.
With Facebook, it'll show my family stuff from like 4 days ago, and then it'll show somebody that I barely know what they just posted 2 minutes ago, and then it goes jumps back and forth and
yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And G Plus does the same thing.
Yeah,
not as bad as Facebook does.
No,
it, but
I
it
have
still
seen.
Does it.
Yeah, I've seen stuff.
Because I don't see all your posts, Mary.
You don't?
All your posts don't make my stream.
No,
like that one you just mentioned never made my stream.
You're kidding.
I had to make a separate stream for just you two, so I can make sure I can see what you post.
Oh yeah.
Oh really?
Because otherwise, I never see anything you guys post.
Because I posted something, and I'm actually it's going to be embarrassing now because I'm trying to find it. that was pretty clever, and I didn't get one comment on it.
Because it probably didn't make a bunch of people's streams. I just don't like it at all. Your stream should be chronological, period.
Yeah, here you know, it was.
If I follow them, I want to see what they post.
It's when the Pope came to North Korea. There was a story. North Korea welcomes Pope to Seoul by testing short-range missiles into the Sea of Japan. So my comment was, I posted this and I said, I understand that short-range missiles and party fireworks are very similar in the Korean language. Looks like somebody misread the request.
That's hilarious. I read that on somebody else's stream. So they must have posted it before you. And what G Plus said was, oh, you've already seen this posted from someone else, so you don't need to see Mary's. And I never saw it.
But not my pithy comment.
I never saw your post.
Oh, really?
That's what I'm saying. Okay. It never made my stream.
Huh. Well, I'm devastated.
But like people I interact with very often make my stream more. Like I see almost all of Kevin O'Brien's posts because we interact with each other's posts pretty significantly.
So I guess, are you telling me that I'm going to have to start commenting on your your gun rights thing? Yeah. Yes. All right, I'll just start. Okay, I'll have something funny on that one.
And my libertarian stands on.
Yeah, well, some of your stuff I agree with completely. And some of it I just think, oh, you know, I'm just not quite there. I'm in a little different spot.
See, that's because you're a liberal.
And I'm not a liberal.
You are a liberal, Mary. I'm a libertarian.
I'm not a liberal.
If you take Democrat and you take Republican and then you take libertarian and it was a Venn diagram.
Who uses open source software more? Republicans or Democrats?
Libertarians.
All right.
So can we finish the this talk and continue on to news?
Yes. I thought we were the news. I just did the news.
I thought we were done with the news. You were last.
That was the end of my news. But
right. And that's the end of the news.
The news. All right. Okay. So, do you have KDE stuff or
no? Not this week.
Does the convention?
Let's do convention scene.
Do you want to do the? Okay, great. That is the Linux convention scene. After a long hiatus, the Linux convention scene is back, and we've got a few open source software conventions this month. We've got FawcettCon, which. It can be described as more of a StarNix or a Unix-like conference that focuses primarily on free and open source software and the systems that run it. This is September 11th through the 13th, which is next weekend at the Rosen Plaza Hotel in Orlando, Florida. There'll be a link to it in the show notes. And then the next one is scheduled for September 15th through the 19th. It's the Linero Connect 2014. Now, Linero is a not-for-profit engineering organization. So their mission is to bring together the electronics industry and open-source community to work on key projects and deliver great tools, reduce industry-wide fragmentation and redundant effort.
I know they
were embedded network.
A lot of embedded stuff and ARM processor stuff.
Yep. Yeah. So that's September 15th through the 19th. And then September 25th through the 28th, we've got EuroBSDCon 2014. Now, the goal of EuroBSDCon is to exchange knowledge about the BSD operating systems, facilitate coordination and cooperation among users and developers. It's going to be in Sofia, Bulgaria. And they've got the first 2 days are for tutorials, and then the last 2 days are for the main conference. So, and did you know there's a BSD certification program?
Yes.
So...
Did you know that they have tests at the Ohio Linux Fest?
I do now. So, anyway, but that is the Linux convention scene for September. Of course, we're going to do a sneak preview and say Ohio Linux Fest is in October. What is it, 24th or 5th?
Sure.
Yeah, it's that weekend. It is. And I think we're going. All three of us are going, right?
Yes, we're planning on going.
Okay.
Planning on it.
October 24th through the 26th.
Yep.
And the keynotes there will be Ruth Schulte.
Who's she with?
I don't know if she's married or not.
that wasn't the question, Tony. A woman company? Does not need to be married to have significant society.
No, you said, I did not say. You said, who is she with? I don't know if she's dating somebody or married.
I mean,
what company
what
she's
organization?
With? Oh.
Because again, a woman today does not need a male counterpart to validate her existence,
yeah,
Tony.
Like,
you misogynist jerk.
You're the one who asked who she with.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. All right. So, anyway, right. She's the community manager for community marketing manager for Red Hat and open source.
Ooh, that should be good.
That was the person I was thinking of.
She's also one of the, or what, she participates the most? No. She participates most in the Red Hat's, or I'm sorry, with Fedora's project, mm-hmm. and co-authors the Raspberry Pi hacks, and a couple other things.
Oh, speaking of Raspberry Pi, we're still in the news segment, aren't we? Sort of, kind of.
No, but go ahead.
I wanted to mention, you know, they have the annual Mackinac Bridge Walk. And for those of you who aren't familiar with, there's a bridge that connects the two peninsulas of Michigan, and it's like 5 miles long. And every Labor Day, they close off a lane of traffic in the southbound direction so that people can walk. Or maybe they close off, there's like four lanes, they close off one side, and then the two-way traffic's on the other side.
They close one side off completely, and the northbound traffic shares the other side.
Yeah, and the governor leads that walk. And this year, he did. And they also had this robot that was put together by, I don't know if it was a local a high school here or college or something.
I thought it was put together by Northern Michigan Institute of Technology.
I think you're right. Sounds good anyway, Matt. But it was, you know,
that's
what it's called?
That's in the UP, by the way, college. You know,
okay, really?
Yeah.
All right, see? Did you read my story? But but anyway, what was really cool about it is, you know what its name was? The Pie Guy. P-I. So as soon as I saw that, I thought, Raspberry Pi, I bet that's what it's built on. So anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Very cool.
All right, Tony, back to you.
Back to me.
Back to you as our coordinator and leader.
All right.
Matt and I are just a couple of pretty faces here.
You're reading us the keynotes from Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I close on it. Yeah. There was Ken Sparks also.
Oh, Ken Starks.
I thought it was Sparks.
No.
Sorry, Ken.
Ken. I'm just going to say Ken.
It's, Starks, Starks. He's also a keynote, and he is, he works on a project. I think he goes by Helios.
Yeah. He refurbishes old donated computers and gives them out to disadvantaged people. Yeah,
he has the Helios project and the Computers for Kids, which is KOMPUTERS.
Oh, and it has KDE on it. Huh.
And then Ken uses free and open source software as a way to make technology affordable, but to liberate those users or those future workers from dependence on proprietary suppliers. Which, speaking of dependence on proprietary suppliers, my professor...
Don't look
professor,
at me when you say that. No.
My professor said that everything we submit has to be in MS Word format. I still think I'm going to do it in LibreOffice and send it to her.
Well, you can save it in MS Word format.
I think really what she said she's looking for is the change tracking.
Oh, sure. Revision control.
Yeah.
And Word does a pretty good job of that.
Does LibreOffice work with MS Word change control?
I don't know. Because I've never used the revision tracking. However, do you know what does revision tracking great? Google Docs. Why doesn't he just switch to Google Docs? A lot of high schools now are using... Teachers want students to submit their work in Google Docs.
Yeah. You know, and I agree. And at EMU, they've switched all their mail users over to Gmail now.
We switched to Gmail.
We have Drive, Google Drive, and Google Docs all built in for my Emish stuff.
The other night on Friday night's night shift, our CEO was there for several hours because he was migrating more of our mail. Like, our entire ticketing system is now using Gmail.
Hey, speaking of Google Drive, you know, it reminded me of this story. I don't know if you heard about, you know what OneDrive is. I think that's Microsoft's version. Yeah. And it used to be called SkyDrive, I think. And it's now OneDrive. Apparently, if you store, Office 2013 files and open them, it's corrupting them or some.
Does not surprise me. Really does not surprise
Microsoft,
me.
Apparently they don't have a time frame for fixing it.
slick.
Or some really odd thing about some certain types of Office 2013 files. I think if it's, or no, it's Office, maybe it's Office 365. Anyway, there's a corruption issue, with opening Microsoft files that are stored in that OneDrive.
Nice.
Certain Office files.
Serves them right.
Yeah.
Just kind of shake my head.
Anyway, yeah. I think we're going on to the tooltip.
On to the tooltip.
Yeah.
When do I get my own music for the tooltip?
Tools from the toolbox.
All right. Our tooltip this week is going to be an introduction to Curl. Curl is often overlooked today in favor of newer, shinier tools, but it can be used in a huge number of ways. One indication of this is the man page contains approximately 155 flags.
Holy cow.
And I discovered that with a grep and regex statement I put together. But about 155 flags if my regex was right, and I'm pretty sure it was. So we're just going to look at a few examples today, leaving further exploration up to you, the intrepid listener. In its simplest form, it can be used to just send a basic GET request, such as curl http://csittext.com. This will pull down the page, including the HTML tags, and display it to standard out. You can add some meaning to this output with the dash V flag, because that means verbose and will pull down. It tells you like what it's doing as it makes these requests. Mm. So, and then that'll also just output to standard out, but the dash V output will be output to standard error, which is also standard out, but it's two, like if you know the codes. So,
mm-hmm. Bless you, Tony.
In order to actually make usable sense of it, I find it much easier if you redirect them each to a file. So, like you would do two redirect to test one info, and then just redirect test one. So that'll send standard error, which is two, to the test1.info, and it'll send all the other.
Yeah, that's nice.
Information,
so that you can get that error stuff, but you don't have to have it showing in the same spot.
Right, because it's not mixed in and makes it harder to find it, I think.
Yeah,
it's
cool.
Way easier to say it. So. Now I lost my place.
All right, I'll fill. So what's the name of this tool again?
Curl.
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 It's not K-U-R-L?
Man curl. C-U-R-L.
Man curl. My favorite was man bash.
I imagine that would be
no,
Mary.
I'm just kidding. Okay. Did we fill it enough for you? Did you find where you are now?
Yeah.
You're working on it.
Yeah. It prints the message about what it was doing to standard error, so it makes this redirection easy. Curl also makes testing pre-production sites easy by letting you specify where you want the domain to resolve to. So if you have a production website, mm-hmm. on one server.
Yeah.
That's listed in DNS, and its DNS will resolve to this web server.
Mm-hmm.
But you have another web server listening on a different IP address where your dev environment is, and you want to test that dev environment out and see what kind of messages you're getting back and see mm-hmm. if it's getting back right. Curl actually lets you specify the resolve in the request.
Oh,
so you can
okay.
say, you can say curl dash dash resolve and then say, the name of the site, colon, and then the IP address you want it to resolve to,
mm-hmm.
and then give it the site name to get.
Yes.
And it will just resolve it to the IP address you gave it rather than using either DNS or your host file.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a
wow.
good way to do test pre-production with mm-hmm. curl.
You know, I've used curl, and just as a little introduction, I've used it slightly, and because my hosting server... will only, or it doesn't have wget on it, but it has curl. So I've used curl to pull files.
Yeah, you can use curl like wget, but curl is much more advanced. You can do much, much more with it than you can wget.
Cool.
So, and because you can post with it also. So like if the site you're trying to communicate with uses a username and a password in order to get the content, you can send the username and password with curl.
Nice.
And say you want to see if, say the site that you're going to also checks to make sure that it's you're a specific browser and won't display the content unless you're using a specific browser.
Mm-hmm.
Curl will also let you set the user agent. So like if you did curl --user-agent and did Mozilla/5.0 open parenthesis MSIE -9.0 Windows Space NT 6.1 Trident/5.0 you will be saying, hey, I'm IE9 on Windows 7.
Can you repeat the part after the Trident? I missed that note.
But that's IE9 on Windows 7 string.
That's cool. You know, now that I think about it, I remember using curl one time to test a user agent to see if the mobile version of the site was pulling right.
Yes, because you can imitate any user agent.
Yeah, that's
cool.
Because
that's a lot of time when we get a brute force attack at work, that's one of the ways to tell it. Because not only is it like banging the admin page over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But whoever wrote the script just doesn't bother to put in a user agent or anything. So it's just --- at the end.
All right.
So, and so then, ta-da, now you're IE9 on Windows 7. Now, let's look at a practical application of curl with its many features. This is a function I use at work quite often, and this will be posted in the show notes, but I'm not going to read it to you. It's a function out of my Bash RC that uses curl.
Hmm. So what does it do?
I'm going to tell you, Tony.
All right.
it will check whatever website you tell it to and tell you the different speeds of things. It'll tell you how long it takes to make the connection, whether your connection was a 200, a 302, or a 403, or something like that, how long it took to get the first byte, and how long it took to get the entire page.
Hmm.
Okay? And you do that by adding different switches. Remember I said there were 155 of them, right? Well, these are the switches that you need to add to get what I get. So you would do curl-so, and then what the S does is it says silent. Don't print any, just give me the page stuff and don't print any, anything else. I don't want to see how long it took. I don't want to see anything like that. Don't print any of that. Just give me the page stuff. And then the -o says, please put the page you retrieve in this file. And then I use DevNull.
Oh yeah,
because I don't care. I don't want to
see how fast.
Right.
What I can see is important. The way you said you pulled how long it takes to pull the first bit and then the rest. That's important so you can know how long it takes just to respond to your request.
Right. Exactly. So and then after that you use the -w. And what -w does is let you specify a string that says, I want to see, this is the output I want to see exactly. And the -w takes lots of different arguments. There, you read the man page. It's really good. And, so you can say, I want to see this information, this information, this information, and curl will give it to you. But it also lets you put plain text in so you can label that different information. Okay. So like when I do the -w, the first thing after my -w is going to be, http://:// http://code:// And what that's going to be is that's going to tell me what the status code returned was. Okay. And it's going to label it HTTP. So it's going to say HTTP and then it's going to give me the status code that was returned, whether it was a 200 for a success or a 302 redirect or a 403 denied. It'll tell me that right there.
Hmm.
because you're always looking for, well, what I'm always looking for is a 200. I want to make sure I get a 200. And what I'm trying to avoid are 302 redirects. I want to make sure I'm just hitting what I'm supposed to hit right away.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Okay.
Makes sense. I had to say something.
And then the next thing is going to be connect colon space percent sign open curly brace time underscore connect close curly brace. And what that's going to do is show me the time that it takes to complete the TCP handshake, the time it takes to make the actual connection to the server. Okay. And it's going to show that to me in seconds.
Sweet.
And then I want to see the next one is going to say TTFB colon percent open parenthesis time underscore start transfer close parenthesis. And what that TTFB is my little shorthand that says that means time to first byte. Okay.
Yeah.
And then it's going to show me when it actually started to receive the data and how long it took to actually start to receive the data. And then the last thing that we're going to ask for, but not least, is going to be total time colon percent open curly brace time underscore total close curly brace. And what that's going to do is show me the total time it took to get the page.
Yeah.
Okay. So the output would look something like this. HTTP colon 200 connect 0.015, TTFB colon 0.021, and total time colon 0.024. So
nice.
That was an actual, I did that actually. So that's real results to my page. Pretty good. Go read the man page and make it do stuff.
Yeah, I've never really used that.
No, the reason I have that tool. Function and do it, though, is because a lot of times customers will say, I don't know what it is. My site is so slow. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I run that for their site, but I do it from the server that's serving their site. So it takes – there's no network involved at all. It's just their code. So if their code is crappy, which it often is, it's going to show me like the TTFB will be 4 seconds from the actual server. So.
Or just close that spam relay.
So anyway.
Huh.
That is the tooltip.
Curl.
All right.
Thanks, Matt.
You're welcome.
Yeah. All right. I have a couple security bit things. One is WordPress 4.0 is out.
Yeah, I saw that.
Update.
And I've already updated.
Can we say update?
The most important thing about keeping your WordPress site secure is to keep it up to date.
That's right. And update not just WordPress, but your plugins also. That's where most of the hacks come in, is the plugins.
Oh, yeah. And be aware of where you get your plugins from. We had a site recently where their developer they hired was writing custom plugins.
Really?
For them, yeah. And what happened was they fired him.
Oh, okay.
And he left backdoors and time bombs in the plugins.
No way.
Yeah.
Totally wiped their
site out. And he was doing it while we were watching. Totally wiped out their HTML director. And we're like, man, the HTML director, he's gone. I was here a second ago. We don't know what's going on. I'm like, wow, it's got to be a time bomb from the developer they just fired. Because the owner of the site had called in and said, please change these passwords. And I said, man, if I was him, I'd have deleted her databases. Then her databases disappeared.
But you guys had backups of all that stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. We were able to restore it all for her.
Wow.
Well, here's my question. So if somebody writes a plugin, I mean, can you take a look at the code, or is it compiled?
Yeah,
and
we
then
see
it's
all the time. No, it's not.
It's PHP generally.
Yeah, okay. And it's readable if it's PHP.
And there's certain actions, certain PHP functions that you look for.
What the tip-off is when you open one of these files and all you see is hex.
It's been compiled.
You can't human read it, but
computer can
do it. It's not compiled.
It's not compiled.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
It's in hex code. Yeah. Yeah, that was that one hack I had. They did that. But yeah, that's crazy.
Hmm. All right, so Tony?
Anyway, more on
the security stuff. Yeah?
I have Namecheap accounts compromised.
Namecheap?
Namecheap. That
name sounds familiar. That right. Cheap name sounds familiar. Are we familiar with that?
I am. Yeah, that's my registrar, my DNS registrar and DNS for one of my sites, or a couple of my sites actually. But it's not specifically that there are an attack on Namecheap.
Mm-hmm.
It was if you use the same password that you have in one of the other websites that were hacked, then your account can be compromised. And this comes up because they were watching their logs and everything, and they noticed a spike in, on the user authentication system that they have. And they went through and realized that these are accounts that people were trying to, access through.
Mm-hmm.
So they quickly went through and stopped them from doing that because there were specific IP addresses they were coming from. But they also said, if you're using the same passwords, number one, change your password. Number two, enable two-factor authentication. So go ahead and do that. It's very important. Namecheap is just came up because they are looking, the attack started against them, but it's not because they were hacked. It was because of
other
people were hacked.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Other sites, yeah.
Well, for people who aren't familiar with it, why don't you give, do you feel comfortable providing an example of two-factor authentication?
Yeah, two-factor authentication is, as it suggests,
the name implies.
two ways of authentication. So a common way for websites is you'll have one factor is your password, and the second factor will be another way that it communicates with you. It can be an email or you read a code out of it. A lot of people use text messaging on their phone.
Bank or my credit union, I'll log in and then it then sends me an email with a code in it that I have to then paste into.
Right,
right.
So I have my Gmail, all my Google accounts are all set up with two-factor
authentication. All of them. How many do you got? Three. Okay. I think I have two, but...
Yeah. I have one for the show, my personal one, and a work one.
Okay, then I have three also. So what am I talking about? What am I implying? All right.
So they all use two-factor authentication.
Yeah, two-factor authentication is a really good way to go. And
I used to think it was annoying.
Most banks are have that available or require it. Google has it available. A lot of online services now have it available. If you have a service that isn't available, if you're hosting your own server and you want it available on some of your services, then there's a few companies out there that have a plugin that's built in that will do that
for
you.
Right, and I have used Duo.
Yeah, Duo. They're a Michigan company. And there's
Duo.
The guys, yeah,
Duo. Duo.
It's Duo. 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 Duo Security.
Duo.
Like two. Yeah, okay. Like two security.
For two-factor authentication.
Right. Well, Duo is also two. Duo.
Yeah.
Duo.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Duo.
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 Duo. Duo Security.
Yeah.
And it's actually.
How is it spelled again?
Right. It's pretty cheap and expensive.
I think we killed
if you're running your own server and you want two factor authentication just for SSHing in or.
Well, they have a whatever. Free version too, right?
Yeah. There's a free version. And then if you're running like a corporate setup, then they have that available also. They also, I think they have plugins for all sorts of different things also.
When I used them, I just had them text me.
Yeah. Yeah. So texting is very common. And it, the most important thing for dual authentication is, or two-factor, is that it's two different communication methods.
Right. Because you know what the different levels are?
What's that?
It's something you know, something you have, or something you are.
Yeah. So a fingerprint is something you are, or like an eye scan
is something. Yes, is something you are.
Something you have is like a ID badge,
a security badge,
yeah, like a swipe card or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then something you know is your password.
Correct, because our data center requires three factor to get into it. You have to have something you know, something you have, and something you are.
Yeah.
Sounds secure.
Pretty much is.
All right.
Unless they beat your password out of you, cut off your finger, and take your badge, they ain't getting in.
Yeah. That's right. And that's what I have for the security bet.
Well, all right,
good.
Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. So, I guess we're going on to listener feedback.
Yeah.
Yes.
Listener feedback.
We had two listeners.
Oh. Wait, we have a soundbite for that.
Oh, we do. Well, you weren't moving, Tony. And
it's listener feedback time.
Right. Okay, so here it goes.
It's listener feedback time.
All right.
So, I think you left one out earlier, but who's noticing?
I forgot. Hey, sorry about that. Anyway, so man, you said
what's going on in the kernel? No.
Did we do that?
Oh, yeah, we did. I was thinking maybe a listener had sent that in.
I know I had a stroke, but I'm pretty sure we did that.
Yes, we did. So, okay, fellas, take it away.
All right. Well, we did get another, we got two listener feedbacks from Scott, one from Guillaume, and Israel.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Matt, you replied to Israel, so why don't you go ahead and talk about that?
Sure. Says, Israel's said, hey, guys, I love the show. I have a Linux question. I think Matt is the address for.
Mm-hmm.
Why are there six kernels at the same time? Except for the 2.6 for the RHEL line, why do we need all the rest instead of one line of kernel? So my reply to him was, Israel, we don't really need so many kernels, but each release has a life for X number of months, and then there are the ones chosen to be long-term releases, hence the multiple kernels. Hmm. Hope that helps.
Yeah.
Yeah, so long-term release, meaning if you have a server running on it and it needs a specific version or something that's running in the kernel that the new kernels either don't have or they made some kind of update that broke your compatibility, then you can still run security updates and stuff against the kernel, but still have the old version of the kernel.
Sure. And then he also got back to me again, and I never got back to him, so I'm going to do that now. Mm-hmm. He said back to me, I thought this was the reason, but why not maintain one kernel line and all the releases will update to its newest or not so new for the more conservatives? I'm not including a kernel like the 2.6 for a very LTS like the RHEL line. And the reason is real is just because different distros and different things will standardize on a certain long-term kernel.
Mm-hmm.
And then the long-term kernel is supported for so long. So that's why. Because the kernel itself comes out so quick and moves so quick is that it's hard to keep something really stable, which is what a server environment needs to be, is really stable on such a fast-moving platform.
I know. We talked about the fact, was it Red Hat still on the 2.36
They still are.
3.6 kernel or something?
They're
or?
On 2.6. I think it's
2.36
now
or something like that.
Yeah. So, I hope that helps, Israel.
All right. And then, Guillaume, he emailed us. He said, probably you've already received, or I'm reading that wrong. Sorry. You probably have received feedback already on the yes command, but if not, I want to let you know a very practical use. For things like dash y is common, where it's a yes to all the upgrades and things like that. But if it's not built-in option, like for sudo or apt, I'm sorry, for pkg or apt or yum for dash y, then you can actually pipe yes into the command. So for, I know, what Red Hat systems or clones, that anytime you do an rm and then a file, then it says, are you sure you want to delete it? Are you sure you want to delete it? Unless you turn that
unless
off or alias
dash, yeah.
Right. Well, he said that piping yes to that or having yes piped to that command then will do that for you. Instead of having to type out yes each time, it'll just stick it in for you. So that, I thought that was interesting.
Yes.
And he says, yeah, that's not a very good example. Like you said, man, dash F for the RM command.
But dash F is dangerous. And, you know, and a lot of people use dash F with RM totally unnecessarily. They think they need it to delete directories with content. and you don't.
What? How would you do that then?
Just with the dash R.
Oh, so most of that's
them,
recursive.
Most of them do recursive. Dash. Mm-hmm. Most people would do dash RF.
Because they dash
think
R.
Because they think they need to, but you don't. You just need dash R, and it works.
Yeah.
Cool. And he says, cheers.
Cheers back to you, Guillaume.
That's right.
All right.
And don't be a stranger. Comment more often.
Oops. Well, right. I hope that didn't translate. I just knocked my mic.
Oh, I'm sure it did. But sorry, guys. Yeah. All right. And then Scott emailed us three emails.
No, two.
Oh, two with a fix.
Because was just a fix of the other.
And he says, yep, it's another book.
very in-depth, thoughtful emails.
Yeah, he was talking about the difference between Docker and OpenVZ.
And Ansible is the one.
Yeah.
Because you had mentioned that as one of the tools.
Yeah, yeah. He says, you guys also mentioned Ansible during SMLRE 133. Matt said that he thought Ansible came from the BSDs, and Scott says, nope.
I was disappointed to hear that.
Ansible actually comes from a former Fedora developer. Yes, and then he names him Michael DeHaan, and it's who previously created Funk. Get out the funk. Anyway, funk is now...
Care to dance a little there?
Funk is now defunct.
That's sort of a pun.
Yeah. Yep. So, and Ansible and SaltStack are both written in Python. Puppet and Chef are both written in Ruby. Ansible and SaltStack can be used clientless via SSH, whereas both Puppet and Chef require a client on each managed host.
Oh.
And they do. We use Puppet at work, and it has a client.
Yeah.
So. And my response to him was, hey, thanks for the clarification there. And the reason that I thought BSD came from, Ansible came from the BSDs was that the two people I know who use it are both BSD people. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So very I just cool. assumed it was a BSD thing.
Yeah.
Do we get any more listener feedback?
We did have another one from Scott, which you can do, Mary. Okay, which Tony can do.
Is it regarding the containers?
Yeah.
I was gone.
Mary's on vacation. All right.
Still, some would say.
So he says, briefly, a container is a form of virtualization.
Oh, yeah, this is the book.
Yeah. OS virtualization, which it means tries to provide a virtual OS environment rather than a virtual machine. It emulates hardware, where the virtual machine emulates hardware. And some of this is stuff is that we had talked about. But to go in.
We covered a lot of that, of what he posts in here when he was actually on the show. So
Where OpenVZ is a third party patch for RHEL for 5 and 6, and then the one for 7 is hopefully coming soon. And it's more mature. OpenVZ has full distro containers, so if you want to run a distro, you can just say grab that distro and it sticks it in for you. Where Docker is an application container with fancy image deploying technologies. I didn't really read it all, so I'm trying to skip it right now.
Basically, what it comes down to is the difference between Docker, something like Docker and OpenVZ is Docker is doing just applications and OpenVZ is running an
entire OS
server. Yes.
Not to muddy that, talking about FreeBSD jails,
that's where all of the container stuff originated.
It's more of a container. As far as the concept goes, it's more of the container type concept than.
Yeah, because BSDs had jails for a very long time.
Yeah.
So.
For running things in a segregated area.
Yes.
So.
Huh. Well, and Linux is too has had it with the Chroot system.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's all good.
It's all good.
You know, I was going to mention that if you don't have any more, you know, my last episode when I did my review of Minimal Linux Live, I forgot to mention that there's no way to shut it off. Now, how many ways to properly shut down a system?
If you've got a shell, you can shut it off, Mary.
Okay. Name me Name me one way.
Telnet zero.
Telnet zero?
Telnet zero.
Oh, I've never. All right, name me another one.
Shutdown dash H, not now.
Didn't work.
Halt?
Didn't work.
Well, halt's an alias to shutdown dash H now. Uh-huh. Telnet zero, shutdown dash H now.
Yeah, the telnet, that telnet dash zero you said?
No, not dash zero, just telnet,
space.
One word.
Uh-huh.
Space zero.
Okay.
Because you're telling in it.
Yeah,
to go to
run level zero.
Which is off.
Right. And I didn't think of that one, but I tried shutdown, halt. I even tried quit.
I mean, but did you use shutdown properly with the dash H now?
I think, I don't know. I didn't use the dash H.
Shutdown only responds if you tell it A, what to do, either halt or reboot, and H is halt, and then you have to tell it when to do it. And you can use the word now.
Yeah, I might have left part of that off. But normally it tells you, there should be like a response that tells you what the pieces are missing.
I can't believe there's no way to turn this off.
Well, yeah, there was one way. It's that button. But
power cycle.
I'll go back, yeah. Right. No, I'll go back and just see because...
I would try tell init zero.
Yeah, I mean, that one makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
So...
All right.
Just wanted to share that.
Or if tell init zero doesn't work, just try init zero.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're telling init? Is that what it is?
Yes.
To go to run level zero?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Music.
And tell, I'm pretty sure, only has one L.
Mm. Okay. I'm not going to dispute that, but you could be wrong.
And it's one word, tell init.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't work, try just.
All right, thank you.
One of those two.
Tony, would you find the music, please?
All right. So, music this week is from our friend Craig's,
Nine Inch Nails. Oh,
no, his podcast. And let me try to get the link up here.
Okay.
I'm sorry, this is taking me a second. I didn't have it ready.
Oh, I'm sure I can fill it with some.
I'm sure that we'll get lots of listener feedback telling me how my tell in it won't work. But
keep those cards and letters coming.
All right. So this is a metal song by Sludge. No, Sluggage. I don't. Sluggege.
Sluggage. Oh.
That's what? That's sludge.
Sluggage.
Do it. Spell it again.
S-L-U-G.
S-L. Wait a minute. S-L-U.
G.
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 Slug.
D-G-E.
Sluggage.
Wow. Sluggage.
Yeah.
And it sounds
song,
serious.
The song is Gastromonicon.
Sounds like a...
Wait a minute. It's what?
Gastronomicon.
Oh, Gastronomicon.
Sure. Oh.
Like Necromonicon.
Yeah, Gastronomicon, which would be
food of the dead.
Food. Yeah. No, not of the dead.
Oh, all right.
The necro part of that is the dead.
Oh, another uplifting tune.
We'll be right back.
Anyway, so. No, but this is, and the records that, or the recording studios that they released through is called Torn Flesh Records.
There we go. You know, actually, Craig did a, he did a lecture, a presentation on LMMS, the Linux Multimedia System.
Right.
Music system. At, I don't know if it was I think it was PenguinCon a few years ago, which I really enjoyed because that LMMS is a very comprehensive tool. But, if you don't know how to use it, I mean, there's a little bit of a learning curve involved. And so from his presentation, it really, really helped me get a better handle on some of the tools and how to get to them more easily and that type of thing. So anyway.
All right.
All right, so you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 134.
Overlords.
Yes, the Overlords Incorporate.
That's right. This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying, same Matt time, same Matt channel. We'll see you next time. Same bad time, same bad channel. See you next time. Oh, no, I said it wrong.
Oh, wow, you're gonna have outtakes, Tony. I'm thinking Matt. I thought it was Matt.